It seems counterintuitive from someone who spent most of her career in the national sphere, in Congress and the White House. But US President Barack Obama's former domestic policy director says it's in lower levels of government where she sees innovation leadership. Melody Barnes was the White House domestic policy chief counsel and assistant to the US president from 2009 to 2012. She now chairs the Aspen Institute Forum for Community Solutions and leads several other community organisations. She's in Australia for a function later today with the chair of the Commission for Greater Sydney, Lucy Turnbull, for the public policy think tank Per Capita. She joined me earlier in the World Today studio. Melody Barnes, thanks so much for coming in.
It is a pleasure to be here with you, Eleanor. Thank you for having me.
Now, I've been listening to some of the speeches that you've made since you left the White House, and you say, and I'm quoting you here, cities and communities are the new innovation leaders. Why is that?
Cities and communities serve as fascinating laboratories. It's the place where you are closest to the citizens and the place where often ideological barriers and hurdles and friction start to break down because people live in the places that they're talking about. They live in the places where the problems occur and where they want to solve them. And that allows, at least what I've seen, people from the private sector, from the government, the nonprofit and philanthropic sectors to work together to try and solve those big challenges.
So do you feel like you can have more influence, drive more significant change at a community level than you could from the White House?
Well, both of them are important. And I never want people to misunderstand my position that an effective federal government is critical. But I do think that we've seen exciting innovation take place on the local level. Some of the work that I've been doing in the United States has focused on funding communities that are working together to try and solve the challenges that face vulnerable youth and to make sure they're connected to education and to employment.
Is this, though, as much a function of the parlous state of politics at a national level in the US? Use whatever word you like, stalemate, gridlock, but it's dysfunctional at that level, and that's why communities are coming in to fill that space?
I think you've actually put your finger on an important point. At least in the United States, we've seen so much calcification. And even as the problems rage, we haven't seen movement taking place at the federal level in the way that communities need and demand. And as a natural outcome of that, people aren't just sitting at their kitchen table saying, woe is me, we can't do anything about it. In the most vibrant communities, people are coming together and saying, we've got to solve this.
You use the word innovation a lot, as does our Prime Minister. What does it mean to you? What is an innovative community?
Well, I think an innovative community requires several different things. One, it requires a focus on people. And that means a focus not only on education and opportunity for individuals, but it also means that we're focused on the places in which they live, which leads to the built community. Are we talking about green environments? Are we talking about places that are walkable, places where people have access to transportation? And then we're talking about places where people can come together and spark off of one another.
Those are the pluses, I guess, of small communities. But what about the dangers? And we've seen this today with headlines in Australia about allegations of corruption and developer influence in local government. What about the dangers of vested interests at a local level?
Well, one of the things that we're seeing is a focus on data and evidence. We have to ensure that we embed in our policies and our practices, whether they're on the private sector or not-for-profit side of the house, a focus on evidence so we actually know what is working.
So now what advice do you have for Lucy Turnbull, the chair of the new Commission for Greater Sydney, who you'll be meeting later today?
Well, first of all, I'm excited to meet her and to hear what her plans are for Sydney and hopefully for us to learn from one another and each be able to take those experiences back home.
She's facing a bit of criticism already.
I understand that.
And, well, this is from environmental groups who are saying, look, your commission has too much power. You're taking power away from local communities.
Well, the experience that I have, and I've seen this in multiple ways in the United States. I've seen people say, you know, we've got a great idea. We want to move forward and implement it and not engage local communities. I think engaging people on the ground is as critical to getting the work done as every other part of what you're doing.
Now, we were talking a moment ago about the frustrations of national politics. Do you think that the public dissatisfaction with traditional politics in the US goes some way to explaining why we're seeing such an extraordinary presidential primaries race this year?
I know. Our presidential primary process certainly has captured the attention of the world. I think that's absolutely true. And what we're watching is not frustration that is 2 years old, or even, you know, 2 decades old. It's frustration that has been brewing for quite some time, and it's spread across the ideological spectrum, which is why we see the great support that we're seeing for Senator Sanders all the way to Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. And it represents a frustration, I think, and an anxiety with regard to security of all kinds, whether it's economic security, stagnant wages, lack of social mobility, a concern for adults that their children's lives will not be at least as good, if not better, than theirs. It also revolves around security that is national security based.
Well, you're a highly experienced and successful political campaigner. You worked on both Obama campaigns. What do you make of the distinct possibility that we could see a Trump-Sanders race for the White House?
No matter who ends up being the nominee for the two parties, and ultimately who wins the White House, they're going to have to address these issues. This is very, very real. And in fact, even though we're seeing very different candidates on both sides of the ideological spectrum, the concerns are similarly rooted. So someone's going to have to address them if they want to be the next president of the United States.
It's an extraordinary backlash against traditional politics, isn't it?
It is. And I think it represents a concern about money and resources and how they play in an election cycle. I think it reflects on the fact that people often see what's happening in Washington being very distinct from their experience and not responsive to their experiences at home. And this goes back to what we've been saying this morning about what's happening on the local level and why people are acting on a local level, because they think in many cases Washington doesn't care about them.
Now, you were, of course, campaigning for and working with President Obama, but are you surprised as a Democrat that Hillary Clinton is not the clear front runner as the Democratic nominee at this stage?
You know, I think a lot of people have been surprised by that, but I believe that a lot of people missed the fact that this level of anger and frustration and anxiety was brewing just below the surface in the United States. And people are having to very quickly try and determine how they're going to respond to it. And people are also having to determine the best way that they can speak very authentically to the American people and an American public that's essentially saying, we are tired of the same old, same old. We're tired of career politicians that don't seem to care about us.
That's the chair of the Aspen Institute Forum for Community Solutions, Melody Barnes, who's in Australia this week.